You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What would you say, first off, are the three most important issues facing Auckland?
Cost of living has suddenly skyrocketed into being a major factor. We still have the other issues of transportation. And look, everyone likes the idea of free transport, and it can be done, but you've got to weigh it up against other issues like $2 billion to be spent on cycles. Like, I've been to Amsterdam, I've lived in Europe, and yeah, that's really great, but our city is not able to do that, and we're just far too big to have that level of transport. We need to get an efficient, effective transport system, so like our students shouldn't be sitting there waiting for hours for a bus or for a train, but let's fix up the transport systems, basically number two. And also, social issues are really important. I mean, whether you want to say it's homelessness or housing, they're all tied together. And we do need to look at assisting people, especially students have, you know, you've got to pay your bills. And, you know, these are, I think, the three major issues we're facing at the moment.
And what kind of skills or experiences do you believe that you have that you think makes you a well-positioned candidate to address these sorts of issues?
Okay, well, number one, I'm an alumni from Auckland University, spent 10 years there. I've got degrees in molecular genetics, science degree, molecular genetics, virology, immunology, plus a host of other science subjects in there. Everything from zoology, botany, physiology at med school, etc. Got a couple of degrees in psychology, including statistical analysis, etc. And a law degree. Now, council works with rules, regulations and bylaws, etc. So it won't be a situation like everyone else will be facing this bureaucracy that'll run them around in circles like, yes, minister, I'll sort them out. I know the powers under Section 9 of the Local Government Auckland Council Act 2009. And I know that I set the committees and everything else. So I will actually be able to use those powers effectively that no one even knows they have to get the job done. Aside from that, like, I've lived in Auckland most of my life. I grew up in Otara. I used to catch the buses and spend half my life on the competent public transport we have. I want to make it better for everyone that comes after us to have and build a proper system, not waste $14 billion on a line from Brito Mart out to the airport when everyone knows who lives out there. There's only 6.6 kilometres from Puanui Station to the airport. You just link that, it'll cost you next to nothing. Suddenly I've saved you $14 billion. Now, the other thing is we need a proper system. You can't have this Mickey Mouse system we have of bus links to train. You build a proper train system that's effective, and then the buses link into it. Only when it's convenient, etc., will people leave. I don't want to sit in my cars on the motorway for 2 hours. No one does. But until they fix the transport system, we have no choice if we want to get somewhere where we want to go and get enough time to do it. I mean, as for, so that's the main public transport issue.
So you mentioned, just continuing for a little bit more on this topic of transport, you mentioned sitting in your car versus sitting on the bus and how we don't really have too many options there. What would you say is the role of private transport versus public transport in the future of sort of Auckland and how we get around?
Well, like when I was living in London, right, you didn't have a car. It would take you where you want to go. You get on the underground, it'll take you everywhere in London, and then you'd get out and you might have to take a bus or catch a taxi. But really, I would see a lot of the private transport, say on the North Shore. We need to link straight across from all the bays down. We need a central isthmus system that is a ring rail system around the central isthmus and connections from West Auckland straight up to North Shore. What we need is another ring that goes out from the city, extending out, say, near Kohimarama down through Panmure, and that's part of the ring, and through Onehunga, et cetera, back. They can go in both directions. You also need to link from Manukau through Botany, Panmure. So basically, anywhere in the city, you just switch lines like they used to do, like you do in London, and you can get anywhere you want efficiently when trains will be running every 10 minutes or so. The point is to get there efficiently, and then when you can't get there, there will be some places where buses are required. You have to use buses because train can't be everywhere. But there'll also be feeders. You take your car, drive from home, hop off at the station, park it, and then you run the rest of the day going to places you need to go by train. That would be the efficient way to do it. It would limit the use of cars because we've got a bottleneck system. We've got the terrain preventing a lot of things. There's a bottleneck in the south. We can't go across. We've got a bottleneck again at the bridge or out west. So with using what we've got, those are the best options.
What would you say about the role of cycling and cycling infrastructure in terms of alleviating some of the pressure on public transport and on the roads?
Okay. You've got to get to university. Well, let's say you've got a job in town and you've got to cycle from South Auckland. It's only 20 kilometres, 18 kilometres. Look, it's unreasonable when you're travelling those sort of distances in a giant city to be able to expect that you'll get there on a bike. And it's more for people travelling 5Ks, 10Ks, it sounds reasonable, but you imagine the first thing you've got to do when you get off is, especially in winter, either change your clothes, shower, whatever. It's not really feasible if you've got to just do your job. Later on, I foresee that it would be useful once we get the pressure off the motorways, that you've got an easy transport system, then it's easy to go around and people use it. But in South Auckland, for example, they're all empty because people are too scared to drive. And I don't let my kids go out there with bikes. I don't go on the road. I know two of my friends that died, got killed by cars because they're cyclists. It's not their fault. It's just too dangerous in South Auckland to drive around in cars. So great idea, beautiful thing to do in the future, but Auckland's not ready for it yet.
Another major topic, as you've identified, that many are concerned about is housing. What is your plan to address the high cost of housing and also the lack of new developments?
I'll tell you what, it's our first thing to stop, prevent lack of new developments is to stop the council suing the developers in Drury. Do you know out in Drury, they want to build an area that'll be the size of Napier, right? Great, sounds great, doesn't it? More housing. But you know what council's done? They are suing them to stop them building. And you know their justification? It'll cost $1 billion in infrastructure. Well, I say to them, stop wasting your money on unworkable and wasteful schemes and put maybe part of that $2 billion you were doing on cycles for later. You can push it down the track and take that and build the infrastructure for the housing. You imagine what 15 or 20,000 houses out there would do and make it easier for people to build. Get rid of a lot of the red tape. I mean, keep the safety factors because we've seen a lot of bad builds. The council is responsible for that, all the leaky homes, etc., to a large degree. But make it easier. Cut down that red tape for housing. We've already got the ability now to build three or four houses, well, three houses on an old site that used to take one. I see them doing it all the time in Otara now. I was down there the other day and they're knocking down houses everywhere and putting up two-story houses, three-story houses, three on a section where there used to be one house. Sounds great, but you ever heard of the word projects? What happens when you build and pack people in even tighter? I remember when I was living in Mount Wellington and we were all in these flats and we had rats everywhere. You're going to get serious issues when you pack people, especially poorer people from some areas who can't afford the rest of the services to fix these places up. So you've got to consider those issues as well. But that's my job as well, to make sure. And what I'd like to see is landlords be licensed as well for the quality of their job. Everyone shouldn't just be able to be a landlord, and as long as they meet the requirements, most people will, but you do get the few and they need to be policed.
Do you believe that there is some kind of a need to develop more intensely in the centre city, or can it only happen further out?
No, you can develop. Look, the main problem there are some beautiful areas. Like, I remember my great-great-grandfather built a whole lot of houses along Jervois Road, what, back in 1810 or whatever, way back then. And they're beautiful houses, Jervois Road, Epsom, Mount Eden. There are a lot of beautiful places, and they need to be protected. But there are a lot of other areas reasonably close that you can expand. And when they're not special homes or they've got no, and even Onehunga, for example, out that way, there's some Cornwall Park, there's beautiful old villas. But in a lot of other areas, there's no reason why you can't expand them. There's no reason why the government shouldn't buy those areas. The problem is the government competing against developers and it competing against ordinary people to buy houses. That's always been the problem, driving up prices as well. So yeah, I would want to see more intensification in certain areas closer to the city, but you don't need to be right in the city. And of course, there's no reason why we can't use a lot of that empty office space now to housing. Great. If you're a student to live just down the road, I mean, I've been a student, I just lived in close to the university, all around Ponsonby and Flatting and in Newton, etc.
You mentioned earlier council's wasteful schemes or unworkable schemes. Could you just elaborate, moving on a little bit, just very briefly, on what some of these schemes are?
What I mean by those, for example, are, look, okay, we all agree with global warming. It happens. We all know that we have to, you know, prepare for the future and do that, but we've also got to weigh up how much are we going to carry on our backs right now. We're in a position where, look, we're running out of money. The hole in our budget was plugged with about 250 million, 300 million that Gough got from for basically selling off our water by not opposing it. We've got a whole lot of issues like that that need to be dealt with and unworkable. Let's say for the parking. They want to force people, AT and actually the government's now got their policy too. So we know where it came from. It came from the Labor government. Not that I'm pointing fingers, but it is the government, apparently. So they're trying to force these schemes of no parking anywhere, block all the roads. They killed the CBD. People don't want to go there. You can't park. You can't get there. Everything's blocked up. The real blame for killing the CBD is not COVID. It's not anything else. It is AT. When you drive down there or walk down there, well, you walk down there these days, it looks like some drunk was driving around with a truck with concrete blocks falling out everywhere. There's no rhyme or reason to much of what they do aside from make it impossible for cars to be there. So these sort of things. And also, like I said, they want to put $14.9 billion for a link from Britain Mart to the airport that could be done for probably, who knows, $50 million or less. These are crazy schemes that they do. They don't have any sense. They work by consensus. And the problem is, if you only work by consensus and you don't have strong leadership, you'll just get the consensus. You won't get the best decisions or even good decisions. And that's what leadership is required as well. There's two parts to being a mayor. You have to work with people. You've got to be able to lead them. You've got to be inspiring. You've got to attend functions and be a good speaker and, you know, tell people about hope and inclusiveness. That's part of the job. But the other part is knowing what to do and providing leadership to get the best job done. And none of the other candidates have both of those requirements.
You mentioned earlier about parking and AT and some of the changes to road usage killing the CBD, more so than the impacts of COVID. Could you elaborate further on what you would do as mayor to revitalize what many are calling a sort of declined, you know, central city? What would you do to fix some of these issues?
First thing I would do is unblock all the, like, Queen Street and those other streets. And also, there's something, there's only a partial blockage due to that, the building work there. Unblock the streets, open them up, and free parking. Because I know for one thing, I don't go to the city. I'd love to go to the city and do shopping, but I'm not willing to pay $30 for a visit, nor to run around hoping I don't get my car towed or, you know, and then have to walk from some car park miles away. Look, first thing is clear it up, make it open, because it's lack of foot traffic that kills these shops. You can't have a shop or a business running if no one's coming past. And that's why you've had 30-plus shops empty along Queen Street. And also get, I agree with some of the other people, get attractions, open the city up, make people want to go there. But the first thing is make parking free, make parking accessible, make people feel that they can use it, because I want a public transport that works. But until you get people using it, merely saying, let's make it easy to have those people come there, won't work, because most people will go to something like Newmarket where they can park, to other centres. Nobody is going to go to the struggle of adding an extra hour to your trip just to go to the city unless it's something really special they need. Safety is a big issue. Like, we need police on the beat. Because it's turned into a bit of a wasteland over there, of course you're going to get more crime and people hanging around, sitting in doorways, sleeping there homeless. I actually think the council should do more to work with social services. Like, I'm a lawyer. I spend a lot of time eating McDonald's, and I see the same people every day, and clients of mine, because I'm a criminal lawyer, say hello to them. But, you know, the same people there, and council should be saying to these people, some are addicts, some, look, let's try to help you, but you shouldn't really hang around here. But if you're a genuine person, but other people I've seen, they take the money, then they walk off, picked up by some expensive car, two or three of them, they drive off. We do need to make sure that social services are helping. And also, we should remove homeless people from there and take them to shelters. They shouldn't be sleeping out in the streets and making it dangerous for other people. The police should be walking up there and making it a safe place, because it's also the place that tourists come. We need to revitalize the city.
Just finally on this topic of increasing foot traffic, which many people link to revitalizing businesses, as well as increasing safety by having more people on the street, what a lot of people say is that to increase foot traffic, you need to reduce the amount of cars and reduce the amount of traffic so more people can walk around and you have a more walkable city. How would you address this sort of argument?
Turning the street into a park is not going to attract anybody except someone who wants to sit in the park. The reality is that that is not... Look, there's never been a problem with foot traffic when the roads were on, the cars were on the road and the people on the footpath. All you get is packed footpaths. The idea that you have to make people able to walk on the streets, what do they want? 50,000 people constantly walking along there, you don't need that size of a footpath to get the people there. It's just ridiculous. Get people in there, let them use their vehicles. For example, the first thing that killed a lot of shops, or nearly killed them, in, like in Ponsonby, Surrey Crescent, they started blocking all the, taking all the parking away, and all these other shops going, well, no one can stop here anymore, they won't come to our shop. And it's the same thing, no one's going to stop and shop in the middle of the street in Queen Street, because they have to think, where am I ever going to get a park? And then it's going to cost a fortune. Forget it, I'll go park down the road or go to Newmarket, where I can drive in the park area and just walk into the shopping area. That's the reality. That is what is killing it. And just making it a park is not going to help anything. Just worsen it. If we had a great transport system and people would spend the day as a day trip, like I remember when I was young, we'd travel to farmers and it's a whole day trip. And then you'd wander around, you'd go upstairs, you'd have a free bus to get there. They had things for all the kids and you could turn into a park area. But the thing is, you've got to be able to get there easy and get out again. And until they fix up the public transport system, forget about that thing working at once.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.